This account of Lazarus as being raised from the dead by Jesus in John 11 begins with a very strange act of love. You can see it in verses 5 and 6. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. We get told that Jesus loves this family, the sisters and their brother. But hearing that they need him, he doesn't drop everything to be with them. It's a strange kind of love. But just before this, in verse 4, we were told that Jesus is playing out a larger strategy. These events are going to reveal something to his disciples and to us. So he says, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Glory in the Bible is the idea of obvious goodness. To glorify someone is to make their goodness more obvious. When Jesus says, "It's for God's glory," he's claiming that Lazarus' sickness and death will make God's goodness more obvious. More specifically, Jesus says, it will make his goodness, Jesus' goodness, as God's Son more obvious, so that God's Son may be glorified through it, he says. But what does this mean? Jesus thinks these events will be revelatory for us, so he waits. Jesus hears that Lazarus is sick, but he waits until he is good and dead. And this strange act of love is so that we might understand him more deeply. Lazarus helps us understand Easter. As he does this, we can understand Jesus more clearly. His goodness becomes more obvious. I think there are 3 ways that Lazarus and his raising from the dead helps us to understand Easter better. The first is by forcing us to ask a question. Why does the one who raised Lazarus himself die? Jesus' death on the cross didn't happen because he finally met a power he couldn't overcome. He'd already shown power over death by raising Lazarus. So why did Jesus willingly choose this? Reading about Lazarus' raising helps us to ask the right question, and I think that is the right question. You see, there's no questioning in the accounts of Jesus' life that he goes to his death consciously, willingly, purposefully. In fact, it was the choice to go to Bethany, where Lazarus and his sisters lived, that was the catalyst for his crucifixion. Jesus died as a direct result of his choice to go and raise Lazarus. This is exactly what the disciples are worried will happen. In John 11, verses 7 to 8, when Jesus says, "Let us go back to Judea," they reply to him, "A short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back." When it is clear that Jesus won't be deterred, Thomas, in a despairing voice, says, "Let us also go, so that we may die with him." The disciples are very clear on what the choice to travel to be with Lazarus might entail. At the end of chapter 11, their fears are proved correct. Many Jewish people start believing in Jesus because of the raising of Lazarus, and this is reported to the Jewish religious leaders. In verse 48, they say to each other, "What are we accomplishing? Here is this man performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him." Then we are told in verse 52, "From that day on, they plotted to take his life." A few chapters later, Jesus says this, "My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." That comes in John 15, verses 12 and 13, and it's one of Jesus' most famous sayings. But I think in the background is the reality of the choice that he made in going to save Lazarus. It was the choice to lay down his life, to be handed over to the Jewish leaders to be crucified, a choice he made consciously, willingly, purposefully. The raising of Lazarus forces us to ask a question, doesn't it? Why did the one who had this kind of power, power over death, willingly die? Secondly, Lazarus helps us to understand Easter by confronting us with the existential threat that hangs over us all. We all face death like Lazarus. We see ourselves mourning in his mourning sisters. Martha's anger her accusations, her grief. And we will lie in a grave like Lazarus, or have our ashes scattered, while others sob or rage over us. This existential threat hangs over us all. We will do almost anything to escape it. Out of the fear of death, the fear of COVID-19, our entire world has en masse blown up the economy, restricted freedoms, destroyed the livelihoods and wealth of vast numbers of people. That's because death terrifies us. At Lazarus's grave, even Jesus weeps. It is this existential threat that leads Jesus to his own death. Not because he was powerless in the face of death, but because he chose to sacrifice himself to deal with it fully and finally for us all. He laid down his life for his friend in order to end the separation from God that twists and ultimately ends every life. That's what the Bible calls sin. Sin is our choice to live without acknowledging God. The penalty for this treatment of God is death. This existential threat that hangs over us isn't just a biological ending to our life, but a spiritual separation from God, the author of life. Physical death is just the body's way of showing our total dependence on God for life. When we reject God, we die spiritually. And spiritually dead people become physically dead people. Jesus' death takes the penalty we deserve. He deals with the existential threat of God's punishment by accepting it for himself. Without the penalty for sin, we are free to enter into relationship with God again. We can be reconciled. In reconciliation to God, we're given a new life, spiritual and physical resurrection. The death of Lazarus helps us to understand Easter because it confronts us with the existential threat that hangs over us all, the threat dealt with for us by Jesus at Easter. Thirdly, Lazarus helps us understand Easter by extending the promise of life to us. John chapter 11, verses 21 to 27 is the central paragraph in this whole long chapter. It's the little conversation that occurs between Martha and Jesus when Jesus finally arrives in Bethany. It's central because of the dramatic things that Jesus says, but also because this is where we get drawn into the story. Look at it with me. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." It's not hard to hear the palpable grief and accusation in Martha's tone, is it? And Jesus' response must have sounded callous. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day," verses 23 and 24. What Jesus says here is pretty cold comfort. Jews believed that at the end of history, all people would be raised from the dead to face God's judgment, and the righteous would go on living in God's new creation. When Jesus says, "Your brother will rise again," it would have sounded a little bit like someone saying, "It's okay, you'll see him in heaven." Pastoral Sensitivity 101 knows that this isn't the right thing to say. You don't comfort a grieving person by saying you'll see them again in heaven. Who knows when that would be? These are seemingly callous words from someone who could have made more of an effort to come and perhaps have healed him before he died. But then Jesus continues. Verse 25, Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life." Jesus takes that Jewish belief in the resurrection and then says something utterly radical in response. "I am the resurrection and the life." He places himself at the center of God's judgment of all people. He makes himself the one through whom people can hope for resurrection from the dead and to go on living in God's new creation. These claims would be outrageous, except for one fact. Every Easter Sunday, we celebrate that Jesus himself was raised from the dead. Jesus' own resurrection is the stamp of authenticity on these claims. What he says next makes this
especially relevant for you and me, because he extends the promise of life to us. He says, "The one who believes in me will live, even though he die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die." Verses 25 and 26. He doesn't say to Martha, "If you believe in me, you will live." What he says is, "The one who, whoever." He deliberately makes this promise general. The promise spoken to Martha can include you. This is the third way that the story of Lazarus helps us to understand Easter. It extends the promise of life to us.
So, how do we respond? Jesus asks Martha a question before he goes on to raise her brother. He says, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" Here is the response that Jesus wants, from Martha and from us: believing in him. I love this little section, this verse, because it defines belief really helpfully for us. First, belief is personal. Jesus asks Martha to believe in him. It's trusting Jesus, not just knowing things about him. The second thing is that belief is a lifestyle. Jesus says, "Whoever lives by believing in me." Belief isn't just something that you might have done once as a kid. It's a commitment to trusting Jesus that shapes all your decisions and actions. Finally, belief is a decision. Jesus asks, "Do you believe this?" At that moment, Martha needs to take all the evidence she has from her friendship with Jesus. She needs to take his words and his actions, and she needs to decide, "Will I trust him now?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." Martha's response is an assent to the truth. It involves believing claims about Jesus. And it's also an action that shows trust. She fetches her sister. She goes to the tomb of Lazarus with Jesus. It doesn't mean that she never has doubts again. In fact, at the moment when Jesus commands them to open the tomb, she's still worried about the stench of the dead body. But now she's traveling with Jesus, trusting him to show her his glory. That question that Jesus asked Martha, "Do you believe this?" is the same one he's asking you this Easter. He's promising resurrection and life to anyone who trusts him. Do you? Believing Jesus is personal. It means trusting him, not just knowing about him. It's a lifestyle. It shapes all your choices and actions. And it's a decision. It's one you can make right now. In a moment, I'm going to lead us in a simple prayer that expresses trust in Jesus. I hope you'll join me. Well, Lazarus helps us to understand the meaning of Easter. Wouldn't it be something if Jesus used coronavirus, just like he used Lazarus' sickness and death, to make his glory, his goodness, more obvious today? Let me pray.